We are about to link up, friends, with the Grand Marshal of the St. Patrick's Day Parade for 2020. And, he's Jim Callahan. And his Irish heritage goes back, of course, to counties of Limerick and Kerry. He is the 259th consecutive Grand Marshal of the New York St. Patrick's Day Parade. Friends, because there's hardly any, any point in saying that there is a job or there is a profession that is, in fact, more significant than being the general president of the International Union of Operating Engineers, representing 400,000 workers in the U.S. and Canada. And, of course, he will go down in history as about the only New York St. Patrick's Day Parade Grand Marshal who got two cracks at it, because, of course, the St. Patrick's Day Parade is not cancelled. It is postponed. Let me welcome Jim Callahan. Jim, you're very welcome.
Oh, good morning. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak to you today. How is everything?
Everything is as good as can be expected, as they say.
Right. That's right. It's interesting times we live in.
It is. Long after people, will have forgotten the names of Grand Marshals over the 259 years, your name will be there in neon lights. And
yes.
Yeah.
I found myself that I'm now a trivia question, and and I wear it with pride. It's like I said, it's interesting times, and a little of course disappointing, but as we all know, with our Irish heritage, we've all stood up to adversity, and when times are trying, and we muster up and put our chin out and keep going. That's all. That's maybe a good sign here. It's a lesson,
yeah,
to show that our Irish heritage, through thick and thin, we muddle on.
And I would also like to point out that when the schools, when most say Broadway. When events have been cancelled right, left, and center across the United States on this St. Patrick's Day, there will be a great number of people. And, of course, everybody said, well, you can work from home.
Yeah.
Of the 400,000 workers in the International Union of Operating Engineers, they will not have the choice of working for home, because they make it, that's one of the jobs, the professions that must go on regardless.
Yes, Adrian, so most construction sites that are still operating will go on, and everyone will show up and do what they're supposed to do. And I represent also 150,000 what we call term as stationary engineers,
yeah,
who maintain the environments in most of your theaters, your buildings, your stadiums. So any high rise in New York City usually has an operating engineer in the bowels of the building that's making sure that all of the environments. So they're now pretty much on double duty, making sure that all the air handlers and everything in those buildings are up to snuff, so they're not there's no contamination. So, yeah. Like you said, we muddle along. We've had the proud tradition that when there's adversity around this country, and we run towards it to help the greater good, and it's a great honor to represent those men and women.
And you know, included in that list of very important life-saving areas are hospitals. Hospitals must go on.
Absolutely.
Yes. You know, and again, in addition to the construction end of it, there, and this is 24/7.
Yes, sir.
And
yes,
even sir. And even you know, as say airports and the uncertainty of you know, of travel, whether that's again by air, by sea, by anything, mm-hmm. you still need to have your right. operating engineers, and they're on duty. Can you tell us a little bit, Jim Callahan, about your own family history? Parents.
I'd be honored. I am a third generation operating engineer. My grandfather Michael Lyons emigrated from Kerry and the Limerick area. His parents had taken ill when he was about 14, and he was sent over to an aunt in Boston who had taken ill, and he was sent back to Ireland, and then at 16 he emigrated back over by himself and became in them days it was a steam shovel operator. Everything was run by steam, and he was in the Boston area, and he kind of emigrated down around the Northeast working on dams and canals all up in the Northeast of up in New York, and he settled in New York, and that's where my great story begins. My mother was raised in work camps up in upstate New York as they were digging canals and dams. And then when they settled, we moved to Long Island with my father, who worked for Pan American Airlines for 40 years, and I became an operating engineer. This is my 40th year as an operating engineer, and it's overwhelming, the fact of the Irish immigrant that came over more or less of an orphan, to have his grandson be to have the honor to not only represent the 400,000 members, but also to be chosen to march in front of all those lives and souls that I stand on their shoulders that have come before me that walked in this parade. It's a surreal honor for a working man, an Irish man out of New York. It's just you couldn't get a higher honor, and I've had some very good things and honors. I put that probably second to my marriage and the birth of my children. It's just something that it's a great honor, and despite the fact that even if it's been postponed, it's still just a recognition, you know, of not only myself, my family, and my organization. It's heartwarming.
Jim, we need. Again, to you know, point out that this is, it's on the day itself, obviously. This is a disappointment, but considering the times that are are in it, it's really not something, this is not arbitrary to, this has
That's
to
right.
do. But it is going to, we're going to speak with John Lane, chairman
That's
of
right.
the St. Patrick's Day, after the news later today. But it is
right.
a postponement. And,
That's right.
You know, and also, we see, of course, that at the NASDAQ yesterday, that is a tradition, that the Grand Marshal, of course, and the aides are invited there for the closing bell. That was, something that, is very unique and traditional. And there you were.
And we were very grateful that it was a green day on both aspects, for the Irish and also for the economy. So we were, you know, it was a little tentative of how the market would end up, you know, being with the parade being canceled.
Yeah.
And the market being down, I would think that maybe I was becoming a jinx. But but it was great. It was a great honor. And just to reflect back on your comments about the 17th and what the postponement is, you know, I would say that I know where my thoughts will be on the 17th, regardless if there is any kind of a semblance of a parade, knowing that it's going to be postponed. But thinking about all the people that have taken ill and succumb to this virus, you know, we can all, you know, kind of fall to our knees and thank Lord for our health and our hardiness and pray for those who you know who have this has fallen upon.
Yeah, and also it's a great time to test our faith too, and
that's right.
Just
yes,
for you know Catholics and Christians, but for those throughout the world.
That's right.
Will you know, it is scary, and it is real, and it's the first. But again, you know, this will pass, and hopefully there will be from once we get past. A lot of the political shenanigans that are going on, that those, you know, who are expert in the field of medical science will, you know, come up with something.
That's right.
But either way, of course, we're hopeful, and we have to be. Now, a little bit on yourself. President of the New York Friends of Ireland, and
yes, sir.
Through the operating and engineers, you led that delegation to Derry, Ireland,
yes,
for the opening of the James Connolly Cultural Center. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, that was a great honor. We were approached about and for those of who of us that know James Connolly and all he did in the uprising in 1916 and all those people that were hurt, but also his great contribution to labor and even brought over to these shores with Mike Quill and the transit workers. So knowing that history, if you're a labor person, you should know that history, and if you're an Irishman, you should know that history. When we were approached that there would be a culture and learning center in the heart of where all those battles took so many years ago, it was an honor for us to contribute and make sure that the construction was done. And it was just a great honor to walk down Falls Road with all the dignitaries and the people that were very important. You know, the operating engineers and the laborers and the plumbers and the North American building trades were all contributed to that. I know I'm missing someone and I don't want to forget them, but a lot of New York and United States labor contributed to that cultural center, and it was great to do the tour. You saw the history of the struggle there. If you ever have the opportunity to walk through, I would suggest, and the things that they'll be teaching there, they'll be going back to teaching Gaelic to the generation that's probably, it's probably lost, when we all know that it was illegal years ago to speak in that tongue.
Yeah.
So it's just an honor, you know, it's just a great honor to be part of that.
Now, As business manager, of course, you're the executive, and you're the executive board member of most of these noteworthy organizations, not the least of which is the New York City Central Labor Council,
yes, sir.
The New York City Building and Construction Trades Council, Construction Industry Council of Westchester and Putnam Counties, and executive committees, of course, of the New York and the New York State AFL-CIO, governing board of presidents, North America's Building Trades Union. All interconnected.
Yes, sir.
Of course, if you ask some of us, like myself, when we think of the International Union of Operating Engineers, before you came along, we thought that, Billy Lynn was running the entire operation.
Well, he's an integral part of running the operation, and he's a great partner to have. It's an honor to walk along with Bill. Bill does a great job representing his people in Local 30 in New York City area and Long Island and Connecticut. I used to be his counterpart running the construction in New York City before they more or less kicked me upstairs and sent me to Washington.
Yeah.
To sit on the boards. Yeah. Of the nation, but it's just a great honor, and all those great organizations that you mentioned that I'm honored to be part of. We all have our mission is of course to better the lives of working people and give them dignity in retirement and give them a decent wage and health care and working conditions. And a lot of times when I get interviewed, I always try and make the point is that, we wouldn't be the unions in the United States and Canada and all over the world, they still wouldn't be successful without having good partners and contractors who understand that their employees are an asset and they're not a wobble.
Yeah.
They're not something that they can put in their pocket. And understand that especially in North America, that a decent living wage bolsters the middle class, and like I said, gives them health care, yeah. and the dividend of that is that every one of those middle class members give back to their communities in their respective communities where they live because they're thriving. They're able to put their children through college or secondary schools and also help in volunteer firemen and sports and the list goes on and a rising tide rises all boats and I always want to make sure that I mention that of course at the negotiation table we have our disagreements with contractors, but once those things are over and we settle. I have the mindset that we go and we're partners once again. And it's understood that the best negotiations is everybody walks away not getting 100% of what they want.
We should get rid of the misconception that unions and employers are natural enemies, because that is totally untrue. As we see, it's not that employers are giving concessions to union. Unions traditionally have to fight for what is right, what is proper, and management has to understand that, if they rely on their workers, then in fact it behooves them to negotiate. It's a two-way street.
Right.
So
it is.
As you, let me ask you, Jim, about unions in general. We have, for years, when I came to this country, everybody said, God be with the good old days and God be with, when the Irish had, the forefront of all aspects of not only political life, but of whatever. And it's now 50 years later. And we're still, that didn't work out as planned. Unions, God knows, for decades, there were those who were bemoaning, the plight of the unions, and unions were going to be, shoved out to sea as St. Patrick was, you know, banishing the snakes. What is the status of unions?
Well, as you know, we met our peak in the 50s as far as organized labor. We had probably 35 to 38% households were union members of one aspect or another, and that's yes, that has dwindled down. You know, a lot of things have caused it. We've probably stepped on our own toes sometimes, but automation has changed, and of course, manufacturing has been put offshore. So a lot of those amalgamated unions were, you know, of course, defunct. And we're probably down to, you know, 8 or 11% of depends on who you ask of union households in the United States. But you know, I see a resurgence because you know, during the downturn of 2008, I think there was a misnomer that working with your hands was not considered to be a worthy occupation, no matter what you did, as far as whatever trade you are. And you know, and I've seen it, witnessed it myself, is that a lot of students came out of college, and you know, the $60,000-$70,000 in debt and loans, and really couldn't apply their degrees to anything that was meaningful. And a lot of parents would come to us in the unions and say, well, can you do something for my son? He just graduated with a degree, but there's no work for him. And we, of course, have apprentice programs. And I see a resurgence. If I could be as bold to say, is that during the downturn in 2010 and so on, my membership fell to 387,000 members, which is still very, I think it's a 0.05 deduction at the time. But we've come back full strong in the last 10 years, and now we're at 402,000 members. And that's the highest it's ever been during my tenure. And I think a lot of labor organizations think it because people are starting to realize that once again, that a trade is a profession and it's a career. It's not a job. It's not a, you know, it's not a summer job for someone who's going to college anymore. And I think there's a resurgence there. And like I said, a lot of the reasons that the membership fell off is, of course, it's been a concerted effort by politicians and those who want to, you know, think that they're going to get a cheaper, pay a bill cheaper and mismanage pensions and all, and think that the only way that they can eradicate that is by the swipe of a pen. And we're here to stay. I was told also, I'm a 40-year member. I was told also, kid, you should do something else because the unions are going to be gone in 5 or 6 years, and that was probably 40 years ago. I'm like I said, I'm a third generation, and I'm proud to say that my children are they're fourth generation, and it's my job to make sure that there's enough room for a sixth or seventh. We've always have a saying in labor is, you know, leave it better than you found it, and that's my mission.
Again, I'd like to return to the reality of the times that we're in.
Yes, sir.
There are many who indeed are looking, and rightly so, to avoid crowding, avoid crowds.
That's right.
And to operate away from work. Mm. When you take, that has little bearing on our police, on our fire, emergency workers. But it also, again, does not leave an option to, workers who, as operating engineers, as engineers, mm-hmm. and they just can't walk away from this. And we have to acknowledge, not only the power of the unions, but the necessity of having unions to ensure that particularly in times like we're going through, and that doesn't look like it's going to improve rapidly, that we have to acknowledge that the workers workers of America, indeed, are going to be there through thick and thin, and we need them.
That's right. That's right. Once the law enforcement and the fire department become overwhelmed, we're the essential workers that they turn to, and we have a great partnership with all the law enforcement around this country and Canada because of that fact that they understand is that we are essential, and you know we like to consider ourselves as they did in World War II as the you know the fighting battalions that built the engineering battalions is the impossible takes only a minute. The uncomfortable it will take a little longer, and that's our motto, and we'll move on it all the time.
And again, that brings us back to historical occasions where where workers were called upon during the attacks on the World Trade Center.
That's right.
The first one, and indeed 9/11.
Right.
Most of us have, had the luxury of and the security of watching that from afar on television.
That's right.
But the workers were there. And
I was the mechanical, what they call the maintenance foreman on the 93 World Trade Center bombing. And then I was returned back there for Ground Zero because we had the expertise and knew the lay of the land of where we could put cranes to go, get those lost souls that were in the stairwell and all the cranes that were put up and every other aspect of it. Every piece of equipment was there that you saw handling them with dignity and respect was there was an operating engineer at the helm. To the man, for every man that I've had the honor of known in the last 20 years that worked down there, I think that I could say to a man they would do it again tomorrow if they had to, because of the fact that knowing, I think we all ran there knowing that there could be some reverberating illnesses, but we didn't care. This was the good of mankind and the good of this country and to stamp out oppression and more or less be a sign to say you can maybe knock us down, but we're getting up, and we got up, and this country is the better for it. And the other thing that I'd like to say about the operating engineers is that we talked about NASDAQ and Wall Street, and then after the 9/11. Wall Street, because of the expertise of the operating engineers and putting temporary power generation to work, the stock market was back up in 6 or 7 days. I don't recall the actual days, but that was the first sign to show that there was life back in this country. And I'm proud to say that stationary operating engineers and shop operating engineers were the ones that put those generators online to make sure that the stock market was run, to kind of show everyone that we were back and back hearty.
Jim Callahan, again, as I say, you will be, and history will record, that indeed for 259 years, grand marshals were waving to the crowds. And we hope that nobody will have the cheek to say that on the 259th year, the Grand Marshal didn't even show up. I mean, that would be downright, that would be terrible altogether to be known for that.
Well, that would never enter. I'll tell you, I'm marching with a lot of people on my shoulders. Not only, what I stare into is hear whispers of my father, who told me is that you get up and go to work every day, regardless of what the adversities are, and that would drive me to any avenue, because I understood when I took this great honor, there comes with an obligation, so I would never disrespect or find it that this was cheapened just because there's a pandemic.
Absolutely. And we'll have, again, another day. There will be, you won't be staying home on St. Patrick's Day because there's the tradition
That's right.
Of course, Cardinal Dolan indeed right. will have his morning mass, and your aides, and indeed the 69th Regiment will indeed be there. So
absolutely, it's a, and my wife and my children.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you. Yeah, you're lucky. You'll have to kind of stand behind them. They'll be in the front row, you know.
Yeah.
All right. I thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
And yes, there will be another day.
But that's
a
right.
very, very special day is on Tuesday. And my privilege is today to welcome the Grand Marshal of the 2020 St. Patrick's Day Parade, Jim Callaghan. God bless you. Okay.
God bless you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Be well.